I'm glad you're here for this teaching. I think this is going to be tremendously beneficial. It has been for me as I've tried to put this together. We will be going back to the tribulation time, but I just felt like this needed to come right at this place. God, by His Holy Spirit, just seemed to be urging me to go to this particular part of the message and the teaching on David. How do we survive giant country? When we're walking among the giants and they're attacking, how do we survive that? Now, I know that many of you are facing giants in your life. Situations have arisen that are going to overwhelm if you don't find a way to deal with them. There's family, financial, work-related, health-related problems. You're walking in giant country. And there's a Goliath that's waiting for you. He's challenged you. And how do we contend with that? Well, in 1 Samuel chapter 17... I believe that there's some clues. So let's begin on giant country. How do we survive? It's the third sermon on David, man after God's own heart. And I'm going to start reading at verse 32 of chapter 17 of 1 Samuel. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." And Saul replied, "You're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from his mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by the hair and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic, put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on the sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I'm not used to them." So he took them off, and he took his staff in his hand. He chose five smooth stones from the stream, put them in his pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with a sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. How awesome a story. Part of God's training for David. From the moment that Samuel found David at Jesse's house, under the orders of God, God had started training David. And I believe it started long before that, but that's when it officially started. He was training him to be the king of Israel, to sit on the throne. And part of God's training plan for David involved placing him in some difficult situations. In those difficult times, David learned to trust the Lord and to walk in the power of God and not in the power of the flesh. Sometimes what you're facing is a learning experience. As you overcome whatever giant is in your way, you are learning to walk in the Spirit. You're learning faith. You're learning to overcome, not depend on the flesh, but depend on God. David learned the lessons necessary to survive life, and not just to survive, but to thrive in life. We see David in one of the most desperate times of his life in the verses that we have just read. Here, David trusts God for some big things. And in return, he sees God do miraculous things. If you're not facing something huge that's bigger than yourself, then what God does for you will not be a tremendous miracle. But as you face the big things, that gives God an opportunity to show you his miracle-working power. Miracles only come for needs. They don't come for show. So God's not going to show off, but he's going to meet needs by doing miracles. Where did David get this courage? He learned it as he was all alone on the hillsides with God. It was just him and God and the sheep. Sheep don't talk too good. And they're not real good companions. So David had God to talk to and be his companion. What kind of young man are we looking at when we look at David? The one thing that really stood out to me, he's a man of reality. He doesn't live in a dream world. His world is real. And he lives in that world of reality. He's a man who remains responsible when nobody is there to look. Nobody is there to see. In other words, he's faithful when nobody is around. So to David, this guy, Goliath, was no big deal. To Saul, that was a big deal. To the army of Israel, that was a big deal. To David's three brothers that was a part of that army, it was a huge deal. But for David, Goliath was no big deal. Why? Why was it for everyone else but not for him? Because David had been killing lions and bears when nobody was around to even see it. He would lay his life on the line for his sheep. And they weren't even his. They were his daddy's. But he was faithful in doing what his dad had assigned him to do. He had been facing reality long before he had this opportunity to square off against a giant called Goliath. What reality? That God is greater and God is able. So what do we see David doing when the whole army is cowering back, when Saul and all the others are in their tents shaking? David rolls up his sleeves, and just like he did for his sheep, when he fought for the sheep, he's going to fight for the army of God's people and for the name of God. And he's going to defeat Goliath for God and for Israel. Now, I know that you have heard this preached ever six ways to Sunday. You've heard every story about David and Goliath that has ever been invented until now. I am different from everybody else that's ever spoken. You know that. 'Cause half the time I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just up here having fun with you. And whatever God gives me to pour out, I'm going to pour it out. Some things I got written down, and sometimes I say them and sometimes I don't. And some of the things I say is not written down. And I didn't know I was even going to think of that. So I'm going to bring you something a little different. I don't know that it's going to be anything new, just different. But I feel that there's some instructions, helpful instructions that's contained here, that if we will follow them, it will help us have a victorious life. It will lead us toward that victorious life. That life in Christ is the victorious life. That's where the answers are. And I also know that I'm preaching to folks that are battling giants of their own. Every one of us have been thrown into weird situations. Hard, difficult times. Some of it's job related. Some of it's medical related. Some of it's just, we got to stay at home when we need to go. We're not able to congregate. So it's an awkward, difficult moment. But even above that, some of you are facing things that you don't know what to do with. And you don't know how to handle. I think there's some things here that can shine a light on how to handle it and what to do with it. Some of you are facing significant things. It's not the size. It's the God that you allow to work in it. No matter how big it is, he's able to overcome it. And I believe these verses will help us. As we watch David going down the side of the slope toward that valley of Elah to face, and there's many differences of opinion on the size of Goliath. You can find him from about 9 foot 9 to 13 foot 4. it really doesn't matter. He's a big dude. If he's 9'9", he's a big dude. He could dunk a ball flat-footed. Every team in the NBA would be offering millions for him. He's bigger than Shaq. I mean, the dude is formidable. And now little David, who's probably 17 at this time, if that old, but I would say 17. And he's walking down into that valley to meet that giant. And we can see some needed lessons on how we survive when we enter into this giant country. And I want today to share some of those insights on how do we survive when we get there. So point one, survival is a matter of timing. Timing. In verses 17 through 24 of 1 Samuel chapter 17, it says, "Now Jesse said to his son David, take this ephod, which is about 36 pounds, of roasted grain, and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers, and hurry to their camp." The brothers were off with Saul fighting, and it was the custom of that day that your family had to provide you something to eat. And they supplied you and resupplied you pretty much on a regular basis. "Take along these 10 cheeses," verse 18, "to the commander of the unit. See how your brothers are and bring back some assurance," which is a token of spoils, "from them." So whatever they've been able to take, get a little bit of it and bring it to me. I want to make sure that they're okay. I want to make sure that they're winning this battle. I want to make sure that there's a token of them being okay. "They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines. Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of a shepherd, loaded up, and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to their battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines, facing each other. David left the things with the keeper of the supplies and ran to the battle lines and asked his brothers how they were. And as he was talking to them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear." Think about it. This day for David began like almost any other day. That was one of the things from the presentation at Narrow Way. It was on the life of Stephen. And the day that Stephen was stoned started out just like every other day. And they brought that out. And I don't know that they did it intentionally, but it caught me because I had been studying on this. And I said, wow, it's just a normal day. He doesn't know that he's going to die today. David's day started just about like any other day would. He plans to tend his sheep and to do the same things he's done day after day for years. But this day is going to be different. Jesse sends David to check on his three older brothers that's fighting with Saul's army. They've been gone for at least 40 days. We don't know exactly how long they've been gone, but it's been at least 40 days that they've been bivouacked out on the side of that mountain or side of that hill. Because in 1 Samuel 17:16 it says, for 40 days the Philistine came forward every morning and every evening and took his stand. So every morning, every evening, Goliath would come out and say pretty much the same thing. He would taunt the warriors from Israel. And this worried Jesse. 40 days there had been no word. David, I want you to go check on them. Make sure your brothers are okay. Bring back a token so that I'll know. So David goes to his brothers as he's commanded, and when he arrives there, he finds the armies of Israel cowering in fear because of the taunts of Goliath. Now the Bible describes this man in chapter 17, verses 4 through 7. About 9 foot, 9 to 13 foot 4, whatever. He had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he wore a coat of scale or a coat of armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. So that's about 125 pounds. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves or coverings. And he had a bronze javelin that was slung over his back. And it stuck up on both sides. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod or beam, the King James says. And its iron point weighed 600 shekels or around 15 to 20 pounds. His shield bearer went ahead of him. It would be enough to scare anybody. This huge dude with all that stuff on. And then he had a spear, a javelin that he could throw. And it looked like an awesome train coming at you or something. Even King Saul appears to be too afraid to go into battle against this giant. But while the army of Saul hides in their tents, David is listening and he hears the giant blaspheme the name of God and bring shame on the people of God. Now David's day started like countless other days had started, but before the sun goes down on this day, David found himself face to face with a mighty big giant. But isn't that how giants come into our lives? They rarely give a notice that they're coming. You just get up one morning expecting the day to be like any other day, and there it stands. That giant has entered your life. And it's taunting. It's demeaning. When they come, they always catch us off guard. And they always frighten us. I remember pulling over on the side of the Interstate 75 One day in August, 3 years ago, Susan and I were sitting in the car with the telephone between us. And he said, we're going to have to do surgery. And we're going to have to remove your esophagus and half of your stomach. What? It's not really happening. It always catches us off guard. And that fear rises up. When we look up at them, most of the time, we don't have any idea what to do about it. That was my first question. I looked over at Susan. I said, what are we going to do? Because I wasn't sure I was ever going to be able to talk again. We didn't know if my voice box, vocal cords were going to have to be removed. I didn't know what it was going to be like. It was just a giant standing there. But you have them. If we're going to survive this giant country, we need to understand that giants don't just show up. Their appearance is well timed. We don't understand that because our ways are not God's ways. But every giant that appears in your life, their appearance is well timed. Now, from our experience, they just appear like a genie out of a lamp. And it's standing there in front of you, and you're saying, where did this come from? But from God's perspective, they're a part of His perfect plan for our lives. There's something that needs to be faced. There's something that we need to do. If we could ever grasp that truth, that nothing comes our way apart from the permission of God. If we're walking in His will, if we're staying close to Him. Now, if we're out wandering on our own, yeah, there's some things going to come your way that's not part of God's will. But if you're walking in His will, you're walking in His way, and you're staying close to Him, nothing gets to you that He doesn't know about.
That's right.
And allow. Remember the story of Job. God said, okay, you can go this far and no further, Satan. But our whole attitude would change if we understood that. Romans 8:28. It's in the Bible. We know that all things work together for good for those who love Him. God works all things for good for those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. Psalms 37:23 says, the Lord makes firm the steps of the one who delights in Him. Job 23:10, He knows the way that I take. And when He has tested me, I'll come forth as gold. And of course, there's Jeremiah 29:11. I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Everything that comes our way, God is aware of it. He allows it. If those scriptures become real to us, it'll bring great comfort in our hearts. Because what God is saying there is, I'm still in control. Your life feels like it's falling apart. This giant is threatening to stomp you in the ground. But I'm in control. Most of the time, we're a lot like Israel. They had wandered through the wilderness for 2 years since they had left Egypt. They arrived at the banks of the Jordan River, and all they had to do was be obedient to God, cross the river, take the promised land, and God said, I'll bless you there. I'll go before you. I'll have it all prepared for you. All you have to do is go in and get it. But instead of going into the land, they said, let's send some spies to spy out the land. And the spies looked over the land. They came back with their report. 10 spies said, there's no way we can do this. Israel will be defeated because the presence of giants in the promised land, those dudes are huge. We're like grasshoppers in our own eyes next to these people. The spies' own words tell the whole story. The people heeded the negative report of the 10 men. They didn't listen to the 2. And because of that, they spent 38 years wandering around in the desert, aimlessly being led of God from place to place. Here's my point. Did God know that there was giants in the promised land? Yeah. Could God have removed them before Israel got there? Yeah. He could have done that easy. Did God allow those giants to be in the promised land? Yeah. The answer to all those questions is yes. Yes, he knew they were there. Yes, he could have removed them. And yes, he allowed them to be there. Why? Because he wanted Israel to face those giants and defeat them. 40 years later, when they came back to the Jordan River, guess what? The giants were still living in the promised land. They were still there waiting on Israel to get there. 40 years later, and they're still there. By the way, this principle is seen over and over and over and over in the Bible. The 3 Hebrews and the fiery furnace. Same type story. Daniel in the lion's den. Same kind of story. The disciples in the storm with Jesus in the boat. Same kind of story. God knew about every one of those events. He knew what they were going to face when they got to the place that he was leading them. It was a part of his perfect plan for their lives at that moment. Here's what I'm trying to tell you, and I'm going to close with this. When that giant showed up in your life, it did not get there by accident. That giant is there by the providence of God. It's there because God allowed it to be there. We could try and say it 100 different ways, but that would always be the truth behind it. God was aware, and God was still there. And He's bigger than the giant. Those things are in our lives when we're walking according to His way. Those things are in our lives in His precise timing. He wanted you to face, He wanted you to overcome it. He wanted you to be more than a conqueror through Christ who strengthens us. When the giants come, we can get depressed and we can get defeated. Or we can realize, hey, this is a tangible symbol that God's working out His perfect will in my life. God knows all about this thing. And that's what I looked at. I said, God, You knew last year that I was going to face this. You had it under control then. You got it under control now. We can be like Saul and Israel, and we can hide from the giants, or we can be like David, roll up our sleeves and face the giant and overcome him. We can get discouraged, or we can do like Job and worship God in spite of what the giant is doing in our lives. And we can continue to worship, and we can continue to lift up God, and we can continue to serve Him and walk with Him. The choice is ours. But if we can ever understand that giants come according to God's timing, it'll help us survive as we go through giant country. And all of us are going to face them. God knew that Goliath was going to be there when David stepped out of bed that morning. He can say, oh boy, you're going to have a day to remember. Maybe you have a giant that needs defeated in your life. They don't fall easy. It's never easy. Goliath went down on the first swing. Yours and mine might take several or a whole bunch more. Mine didn't go down with the one. But if your giant ever falls, it's going to be as God is allowed to work through your life. And He'll guide that stone or that faith to the right spot. Over and over and over. Doctor after doctor has told me, you're an absolute miracle. You should not even be here. It was a miracle that they found the cancer. He said, I wasn't even looking for it. And there it was. The surgeon said, I know that I got it. And I knew that it was going to be awful. And most people don't survive it. It's a miracle that you're here. And he's the best in the Southeast, Dr. Salo. Listen, God will be with you. And he will guide all the way through it. It's not by might and not by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord. It might take two swings or three. David picked up 5 extra stones in case that first one didn't do the trick. He had another one. When you face your giant, be prepared. Know God's word and let it be applied. Bow your heads with me, would you please?